breaking down the big games and talking about the big names. You're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.
For the first time, Auburn is going to the Final Four. It's a trip to Minneapolis for the Tigers.
All right, welcome in. FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night on another March Madness Monday with Auburn wins. Seems to happen over and over and over again. You heard that right. For the first time in Auburn basketball history, the Tigers are headed to the Final Four, and we're talking all Auburn for a majority of the show here today. And why not? They're the hottest thing in college basketball, hottest thing in sports right now, really. And I'm pleasured to announce that coming up here in the next segment, we're going to talk with the play-by-play voice, the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Rod Bramblett. He's going to break it down for us. That will be here in segment two, coming up in just about 10 minutes. We'll talk with him. But Corey, Bruce Pearl took over a team in 2014 that hadn't been to the big tournament in over a decade, and he's completely turned the ship around. The 2019 Auburn Tigers are now officially the best team in Auburn history. And if you don't want to take it from me, well, why not take it from one of the greatest that's ever played in Auburn, Charles Barkley?
The greatest day in Auburn basketball history. Today was the greatest day in Auburn basketball history.
That was the reaction from Chuck immediately following the game there in that CBS studio crew. And it was fun watching Charles Barkley over the entire weekend. All of the Auburn paraphernalia, the swag that he had out laid over the desk. He didn't say it was the best team in Auburn history. He did say the greatest moment in Auburn history. But what a weekend to be an Auburn Tigers fan.
Without question. I mean, you and I had the discussion last week about would this possibly be the greatest Auburn basketball team ever. And now Auburn's been playing basketball, I do believe, since 1906. So you look at close to over almost 100 years later to where you're in a situation that Auburn basketball has never been in before. And that's just an outstanding accomplishment, not only to Bruce Pearl, his staff, the resiliency of the guys sticking around. And I tell you, they call it the jungle when you go out and you play at Auburn's home court. Mm-hmm. And it's just the atmosphere that he's able to create. The students are there 2.5 hours before the game. The student section's already filled. And that just speaks. And that's when Auburn was not 8-9 and 10-0 in the SEC. This is just a kind of atmosphere that he's created and generated passion about Auburn basketball.
Well, he's got the team. He's got the athletes. We know that now. But I really do think his motivation and how fired up he gets is probably the main catalyst that's driven Auburn to this 12-game win streak. Of course, the win streak began after that big blowout loss February 27th to Kentucky, the same team that they beat yesterday. Since then, though, Auburn has just run. They ran all the way through the SEC tournament and now the first four rounds of the NCAA tournament. So take you back a little bit. Friday, which seems so long ago, but it was only 3 days ago, that's when Auburn came into that Sweet 16 matchup against the Midwest's top seed, those UNC Tar Heels. Auburn was a 5-point underdog, which they've come to thrive in that situation, and came out on top with a 97-80 blowout win. Just a fantastic win for Auburn.
Dalton, when you talk about the blue bloods of college basketball, Auburn has absolutely demolished the blue bloods of college basketball.
Yeah.
I mean, when you're talking about they had an opportunity earlier in the year to play against Duke, lost to them in a very close game, and that in turn prepares you for Kansas, North Carolina, and Kentucky. The only team that they really didn't play was Indiana and Louisville from a lower standpoint. And they have had their way and been able to control the tempo and control the game, even against a familiar Kentucky team that they played twice earlier this year. You look at the final statistics and the way that Auburn shot the three ball, only being 7 out of 23.
Mm-hmm.
If you were to tell me that were their numbers, I would say they probably lost by 10. And then you were to tell me on top of that they played without Okiki,
yeah,
I would say there's no way that Auburn had an opportunity to win that basketball game. But they found a way internally to get it done.
Yeah, they had to approach that Kentucky game in a way entirely different from how they've won their last 11 games. But back to that UNC game, you know, I thought it was interesting coming in because, you know, UNC is known for that fast tempo and for their efficiency on offense, just being able to knock down shots. I think many people expected Auburn to kind of change the way that they play going into that game and try to slow the Tar Heels down a little bit, but Pearl just said no way. He wanted them to set the tempo. He wanted the Auburn team to set the tone. And the first half, pretty tight on Friday night, but Auburn kept that tempo running, going up and down the court. Were more efficient offensively than UNC and ran away with it in the second half. You talked about Auburn having trouble yesterday from the three-point line and winning it a different way. It was the opposite on Friday night. Just amazingly hot from three, 17 of 37, and held UNC to seven made threes. Now, if you do the math, which I'm not very good at, but 10 more threes than the other team, that equals 30 more points. You're going to win more than you lose when you knock down that many shots.
Without question. I mean, they just absolutely outscored the Tar Heels. The first half, a great game, 41-39, but then when you go plus 15 in the second half, heating up from beyond the arc and capitalizing off of those turnovers, it kind of looked like the Auburn in the SEC tournament, to where I'm have a wide open layup, but instead of taking that layup, I'm going to kick it out for three and have that type of confidence in my teammates to knock it down.
And you know, they'll give up a lot of 2-point shots, they'll give up a lot of open layups. So many times you see Jared Harper drive into the lane from the entire other side of the court, and it looks like he has a wide and clear layup, and he'll kick it out to Brown, or he was kicking it out to Okiki, now Purifoy, and they're able to knock down a wide open three. Sometimes it makes you pull your hair out until you see that the guy he passed to is going to drain the shot. But another thing that coming into the tournament, especially against these big teams, people were worried about whether Auburn would be able to keep up with them on the glass, rebounding. And I found it pretty surprising that against North Carolina and Kentucky yesterday, they were neck and neck rebounding. They only were out-rebounded by four against North Carolina and four against Kentucky. As far as the North Carolina game, I feel like when they shoot threes and they bounce off the rim, you get a whole lot more variance when it comes to the rebounds, because they kick so far out that it's a lot of luck involved where you happen to be when that three-point shot rebound comes back at you. But that was a huge part of both wins, was being able to – and it wasn't one person in particular. You had the entire Auburn team running for those rebounds, and that played a major part in the wins.
Second-chance opportunities. Anytime you take that amount of threes, unless you're just blistering the nets and making over 50% of those, you know probably more are going to miss and come off that iron, giving you an opportunity. It's just you have to know your shooters and where they're probably going to shoot from and where they're going to miss from. And again, you mentioned Auburn being undersized. That's one of the biggest things that I think you're going to have to keep an eye on if Auburn wants to continue to punch its ticket, because even though they were in foul trouble in a couple of those games, they found a way from a depth standpoint and shooting the basketball, three being the ultimate neutralizer, mm-hmm. to get it done.
Yeah, and speaking of the three-pointer, I see a lot of similarities between this Auburn team and last year's champion, Villanova, who they sacrifice the two sometimes to get the three. I mean, it makes sense on the surface. Threes are worth more than twos are. But Villanova last year, I think they were 54% from the three-point line. In this tournament, Auburn's not very far behind them. I think they're a shade under 50% on three-pointers. And these teams, they're just following those NBA trends that we've seen set over the last few years with the Golden State Warriors, of course, and the Houston Rockets, who just chuck as many threes up there as they can. They make almost as many as they miss. And when you do that, you're going to come out on the winning end a majority of the time.
I mean, if you look at the Auburn Tigers having the ability, I think what they have to do is, again, they proved in the Kentucky game, they don't have to make that many threes. And that's what's kind of been stuck to them the last five or six games, that Auburn has to make threes to win the game. Well, it always helps. And anytime you're able to hit a three at a critical time, that's important. But the biggest thing is to get those defensive stops. Limit the teams to one shot and done, not giving them a second chance opportunity. That's huge for Auburn. And as long as you're boxing out and you stay out of foul trouble, the sky's the limit for this Auburn team.
I still think Auburn's being overlooked defensively. Even though there's only four teams remaining and they've made it this far, they are just outstanding once they get back into their stance and start playing defense. Forced 14 turnovers against Kentucky and outscored them in turnover points 17-7. And a big number, they held UK to 24% from the three. And against UNC, also forced 14 turnovers, held them to 25% from three. So the defense is getting it done, and then when the offense is knocking down shots, that's what you get with these Auburn Tigers. Of course, the game against UNC ended on a very, very sour note with Chuma Okiki, who led the Tigers that game. He had 20 points, 11 rebounds, 2 steals, and a block. But I think everybody saw him go down late in the game when that left leg buckled underneath him. And they later determined that he did have a torn ACL and will miss the rest of the postseason. But they've kind of rallied around Okeke. You saw him in the wheelchair last night coming out at halftime when they didn't think he was going to make it to the game. And both games, after the win against UNC and after the win yesterday, had him take the Auburn sticker and move it on into the next round. But still, from how important he is to the team, that's a brutal injury.
Without question, Dalt. 12 wins in a row for this Auburn Tiger team is very impressive, averaging 80 points a game, giving up 75. But when they play the Virginia Cavaliers, Virginia's only given up 57.8 points per game. So that's going to be the difference. Can Auburn find that magic number and be where they want to be offensively to get the job done?
You know, against Kentucky, we were saying earlier that they couldn't play it the way they had because they were knocking down so many threes in all these other games, knocked down 17 threes against UNC. But Calipari really had that Wildcats defense on the perimeter. They were going to make sure that if Auburn did get any three-point shots up, they were going to be contested. Bruce Pearl actually spoke about how they had to play this game a little bit differently than the ones they had prior.
You got to take what the defense gives you because Kentucky was switching and putting so much pressure on our perimeter. We were able to get Jared downhill. Bryce made some huge plays. They took the three ball away, so Bryce went to his old school pull-up game. He didn't think he had it, but he got in the lane, he rose up, and those suckers were beautiful, great basketball.
You know, coming up in a minute, we'll talk with Rod Bramlett, the voice of the Auburn Tigers, and we'll get his take on how they had to play this game a little bit differently than they had the previous ones. But before that, let's talk a little bit about Jared Harper and Bryce Brown and what they mean to this team, because yesterday they took over with Okeke not out there on the floor. Of course, Okeke, the top rebounder, and I think the top defender there on Auburn's team. But Harper and Brown especially took over in the second half. He had Harper with 26 points total, Brown with 24. And Brown, he said he got a text from his dad at halftime. After that, he didn't miss a single shot from the field. 6 for 6 in the second half. But once it was OT, it was all Harper. He even outscored Kentucky on his own. 12 points in overtime for him. And I don't know what he has running through his veins or what he drinks before the game, but he was ice cold when it mattered from the free throw line. Knocked down 6 free throws to really clinch the game for Auburn.
Yeah, Kentucky needed some help from Hero and just did not get it. He just finished with 6 assists, 2 turnovers in 36 minutes, and that's just not enough. And from a box score standpoint, if you're looking for an offensive punch for the Kentucky Wildcats. But again, the little engine that could, Jared Harper, you take him out of the equation, and to me that's the difference maker, because now Auburn has proved, because Harper, even in the SEC championship game, picked up 2 quick fouls, had to sit on the bench. They found a way, but that was with Okeke being healthy and being able to find a way with Bryce Brown stepping over and playing a little bit of the guard position. But now that you take those points and production with Okeke not being able to play, Harper and Brown do have to take over, because the inside game, Wiley, anytime he's getting an opportunity to get in double figure scoring-wise or rebounding-wise, you're in great shape. And Purifoy, he has the ability to help you out as well. He's a guy that, to me, is the difference maker personally, I think. Purifoy is a guy that can defend your post players. If he stays out of foul trouble and is able to give you close to 20 minutes, you're in good shape also.
And he's got a big matchup with Hunter coming up this Saturday from Virginia, because he's a guy a lot like P.J. Washington, who can really take the ball and move it to the rim in a quick, quick way. So, you know, to kind of wrap up what we said last week and now this week, I think no question now, Corey, greatest season in Auburn basketball history. I mean, it's got a little bit of everything you want. You got likable veterans who are endeared by all the fans, a coach. I think Pearl could motivate an Alabama fan to run through a wall if he had to for him. And then you also have, of course, now, unfortunately, the devastating injury to Okeke, where everyone's kind of able to rally around that and try to go out there and win it for him. So whatever happens from this point on, whether they go out and get blown out by Virginia this coming Saturday or whether it's a buzzer beater, I think this season will go down in history.
I agree with you. And, again, the matchups are going to be so fun to watch. Braxton Key, the former Alabama Crimson Tide player who's now at Virginia, it's going to be interesting to see how they match up. That Kyle guy is the leading scorer for the Cavaliers. How are they going to be able to contain him? So, again, Auburn, given a few days, I think the rest will help them tremendously. Going to that new environment, how will they respond? Being the first first time, because we've seen so many one-and-doners. You look at Illinois-Chicago last year, having and making that wonderful run, just getting on that big stage, mm-hmm. and played four excellent games, and then in that fifth game just kind of dropped the ball. A historic season, no matter the outcome for the Auburn Tigers. The first time in the state of Alabama that you've had somebody having an opportunity to get as far as they've gotten. I know Gene Bartow and his UAB Blazers were pretty good when he had that program turned around, but never making this type of run. The state of Alabama is now shifting the narrative to not only being a football state, but a basketball state also.
Coming up, we'll talk with Rod Bramlett, the voice of the Auburn Tigers, the radio play-by-play man you can hear right here on FM Talk 106.5. That call coming up on Saturday, tip-off at 5:09. We'll start the pregame show here at 4:30 on FM Talk 106.5. Stay tuned. This is Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5 with Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty.
You're listening to FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Erwig and Corey LeBounty. Call the show or text your thoughts to 251-343-0106.
That does it. History has been made. The Auburn Tigers, for the first time ever, are going to the Final Four. Auburn 77, Kentucky 71. The Tigers are headed to Minneapolis.
And that was the call from the voice of the Auburn Tigers, Rod Bramlett. The final call from the Elite Eight win in overtime over the Kentucky Wildcats yesterday. And as promised, we have Rod Bramlett on the line with us here on Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5. Thank you for joining us, Rod.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
What a fantastic call from you and from Sonny Smith during that game, and what an exciting time to be an Auburn Tiger fan right now. Never seen anything like it. Of course, they've never been this far as a program.
I know. I keep expecting today it's April Fool's Day. I keep expecting this to be some kind of April Fool's joke. It's been an amazing run. It really has. And I've never seen a team like this so close-knit. It's very emotional. If you follow this team on a day-to-day basis and you know these young men, you can get very emotional about what they've accomplished. Now they'll be on the biggest stage possible.
I can imagine. And since Pearl took over, and especially from last year into this year, it's been a roller coaster with winning the SEC regular season title last season and then a bit of an up-and-down regular season. But it's all come to fruition here when it matters in the NCAA tournament. I want to get your thoughts going into this weekend, because the fans, the team, they were already fired up after that win over Kansas last week. But what was the atmosphere like last week around the team and on campus following that win over Kansas and that Sweet 16 matchup against North Carolina on the horizon?
Well, I mean, it was very different. I mean, obviously the basketball program, as you've already mentioned, it just hasn't been to these heights. I mean, Coach Smith really was the last one to do it on a consistent basis. So it's been a long time. And I'm not sure the people outside of Auburn, the community and just the fan base, realize this fan base is pretty passionate about basketball when you put a good product out on the floor. And I think we saw that this week. For Auburn this week, I think the big key was they had some rest. They had a chance to actually refuel and get ready. And I think that played a big factor this past weekend. So it's been fun to be around all of this in the community and talking to fans, and the excitement level obviously is at an all-time high, and anxious to see how many people make the trek north to Minneapolis. I think it'll be a lot.
When you look at this season, Rod, I had an opportunity to talk with you when they played Georgia up there and mentioned that we wanted to get you on Sports Night, and had no clue that Auburn would be able to run the gauntlet and win the SEC championship and then kind of propel them and give them a little bit of confidence. There's always that one game in the NCAA tournament, and that game being the first game against New Mexico State for Auburn, to where you kind of struggle and you fight for your life. Other than that, the overtime game yesterday, Jared Harper and Bryce Brown just absolutely took off for the Auburn Tigers and showed why they're the premier backcourt in the country.
Well, coming into the tournament, you bring up that New Mexico State game. Coach Pearl, I can tell when he's legitimately worried. You know, you could hear coach speak, and even if you're better than the other team, and you go, okay, you're just doing coach speak. I could tell he was legitimately concerned about New Mexico State for two reasons. One, they played a lot like Auburn plays, and that is up and down the floor. They're not a terribly big team. They shoot a lot of threes. And two, Auburn was fatigued. I mean, they had played four games in 4 days to win the SEC tournament. They come home late Sunday night. They slept in their own bed Sunday night and Monday night. Only day they had at home was Monday. And then they were back on a plane going to a higher altitude in Salt Lake City. That was a tired basketball team at the end of that game. But they found a way to win. And when they walked off the floor, they were not relieved. They were not happy. They were angry. They were angry with the way they played. And then you could tell, and I know the team good enough, I could tell that Kansas was going to have a really hard time against Auburn 2 days later. And, you know, and then this past weekend, I think Auburn felt like they could run on North Carolina. They could beat them at North Carolina's game because that was Auburn's game. They did easily. And then Kentucky was just a fist fight. I mean, it just was a fist fight like you normally have with Kentucky. And Auburn simply willed themselves to win that game. They only hit seven threes. And I think that's a good sign. It shows that Auburn can figure out a way to win a game when they're not hitting threes. And now they carry a ton of momentum into Minneapolis. No one expects them to do anything. And that's fine with Coach Pearl. That's what he loves.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he loves being the underdog. And that's exactly what Auburn will be this weekend.
Yeah, he certainly thrives in that underdog role. And earlier you said you could tell when Bruce Pearl is maybe nervous about an upcoming matchup. It just seems, even since his time back at Tennessee, that he shoots you straight, whether he's on national TV or talking to you person to person. But he has that infectious energy, and he's just such a fired up and an optimistic guy. Other than what he's done turning Auburn into a winner, what has Pearl meant to the university and to the entire community up there in Auburn?
Well, he's meant the world, and here's why. You have a lot of coaches who are good at the PR side of it as it relates to their team or their sport. Coach Pearl is the best PR guy I've ever seen, period. He's involved in the community. He has a huge foundation called Outlive for cancer patients. He does work with kids. He goes to a final exam week. He'll go and he'll buy pizza for the students at the student center, and just hand out pizzas to the students. And that's just the surface. He really gets it. He's the best coach I've ever worked from that regard. And he dives headfirst in the community he is in. And this is a small community. Auburn's growing, and it's getting bigger. It's a lot bigger now than when I was in school in the 80s. But it's still a small, tight-knit community, and he has fit right in. And I think I wouldn't be surprised that when the dust settles on this season, that you see Bruce Pearl really get a commitment and make a commitment to Auburn for a long time. I would not be surprised at that at all.
Wow, that's some high praise. Maybe we'll look at Auburn giving him a lifetime contract, which was reportedly just offered towards Kentucky coach John Calipari. We're talking with Rod Bramlett, the voice of the Auburn Tigers. You can hear him on the, pretty much football, basketball, baseball. He does it all, but specifically basketball right now. We've got big game Saturday night, Final Four against Virginia. That call will start right here on FM Talk 106.5 at 4:30 with the pregame and tip-off at 5:09.
Rod, also, you've had some memorable calls for Auburn football, but now you've been associated with a basketball. It's very rare that you see a commentator have an opportunity to broadcast a national championship football game and then turn around and get to the pinnacle of the basketball season and career and to take Auburn to its first ever Final Four as a commentator. Talk to us about what that means to you, especially you being an Auburn graduate.
Yeah. Well, it's awesome because I have everything to do with it. You guys realize that. I mean, that's the reason why they're doing all this. Now, I was on the plane ride back and talking to Kirk Sampson, longtime media relations director here at Auburn. And he leaned over to me and says, Rod, do you realize you have now called two national championship games in football, two College World Series, and now a Final Four? And I really got – I'd not really stopped to think about it very much, but I was like, wow. And I got to thinking about it, and I think in our league, Mick Hubert at Florida, who is still the play-by-play announcer there, he's actually called a national championship in every one of those sports, which is amazing. Jim Hawthorne, the retired play-by-play guy at LSU, and myself, I think, are the only three in the league that have managed to do that. And believe me, the Final Four, out of all those three, I think the Final Four is the hardest to get to. And I'm looking so forward to just soaking it all in. Because you're right, you said it is the pinnacle of college basketball. Getting to the Final Four, yeah, you want to win it all, and Auburn has a real chance to do that.
That's something.
Being there is amazing, you know?
I can't even imagine it. And that's something I wanted to ask you about, you know, being so vital to the Auburn program. Did they let you keep a piece of the net once they cut them down, once they cut the nets down yesterday?
I may or may not have more than one piece of the net in my bag.
nothing wrong with that.
I got a backup just in case the other one got lost. No, I do. I have a piece of the net. It was so great of them to think of me, because I can't go out there and cut it down because we're still on the air. But, yeah, it was our whole broadcast crew got a piece of the net. It's very, very special. It will get framed right next to the box score from the game, that's for sure.
That's outstanding. Well, you know, Auburn did have some heartbreak over the weekend, Friday night, as the game started to come to a close with the do-it-all defender, best rebounder on the team, Chuma Okeke, just dropping when his left leg gave out from underneath him. How was the team's – what were their reactions off the camera Friday night and Saturday, and did they use that as motivation going into the game yesterday?
Absolutely, I think they did, and you know, it was and I wasn't back there, but I was told that in the locker room after the win over North Carolina, it was an odd locker room, because as I mentioned, this is the closest knit team I have ever been around in any sport, and they care so much about each other. There was a tempered excitement. They knew they were getting a chance to play for a trip to the Final Four. That was all secondary in that moment to Chuma Okeke, because he was back in the locker room, leg wrapped up in ice. At that time, they feared the worst, didn't know it was a torn ACL, but kind of had a sneaky suspicion that it was. And if folks haven't seen it, they need to go see it online on Twitter, social media, the video of Anthony McLemore helping Anthony McLemore, who, by the way, broke his ankle last year. And couldn't finish the season, helping Chuma Okeke to the big board where they're allowed to put the name of the team that advances to the next round on there. And Chuma got the honors there. He is a big, big loss. And the big question to me going into the weekend is, can Auburn sustain his absence like they did against Kentucky through two more games? That will be a challenge.
Well, speaking of that, what do you like? Do you like their chances against Virginia going into this weekend? I know that pack line defense seems to be all that anyone can talk about, but it really, you know, they want to get the ball on the outside and get other teams to take contested threes. Auburn should thrive in that scenario, right?
Well, you know, it's an interesting matchup. I was just looking at Virginia's stats about an hour ago. I finally had a chance to kind of dive into it a little bit. In tournament play, in NCAA tournament play, they have four of their five guys playing over 30 minutes per game. They've basically only gone six or seven deep. That's advantage Auburn, because Auburn will go nine deep, and if they can get up to that fast pace, it's a big advantage for Auburn. But on the flip side, the three-point shot during the regular season has – I mean, it's been well defended by Virginia. Teams are only shooting 29% from three in the NCAA tournament. I'm trying to find that stat. I'm looking for it. Last five games, actually, for Virginia, opponents are shooting 39%. So they haven't defended the three quite as good in postseason play. So if you look at those two numbers, you have to feel good if you're an Auburn fan. This is still a terrific Virginia team who has only lost three games. All year, so let's not forget about that. I just think it's a fascinating matchup between two teams that want to play completely opposite of one another.
Well, I tell you what, Rod, Saturday on the call with your partner, Sonny Smith, you guys bring the excitement to all the Auburn fans and the Auburn faithful, and how awesome is it to have the former head coach right by your side giving you great insight on not only the officials, but sometimes the players' mindset also, and I know you're really going to do a great job and have done a great job all season long, and look forward to listening to your call on Saturday.
Absolutely. I appreciate it, and being with Sonny through all of this, considering how much he still loves this place, has been just an honor. And it was neat getting a picture with him in the locker room last night holding the trophy. A trophy he came close to getting one time, but he got to hold one last night. It was really cool.
Well, we're looking forward to the call, Rod, and thank you so much for joining us tonight on Sports Night. And I guess we better let you go so you can study this Final Four game and then the A-Day Spring Day rosters. You got that coming up right on the other side. So lots of studying for you.
Appreciate it. Thanks, guys.
All right. That's Rod Bramlett, the voice of the Auburn Tigers, joining us here on Sports Night. A great look into what's been going on in Auburn over the last couple of weeks and a little foresight with this big matchup against Virginia coming up on the weekend. Speaking of that, when we get back, we're going to go more into detail about how Auburn matches up with that number one seed and whether they have a good shot at making it into that national championship game come next Monday night. A little later, we'll also talk about the new coach at Alabama, Nate Oates, keeping one of his own back in Tuscaloosa and also already has a recruit sign. So you're listening to Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5 with Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty.
You're listening to FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night with Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty. Call the show or text your thoughts to 251-343-0106.
All right, thanks again, Rod Bramlett, the Auburn play-by-play, the voice of Auburn Tigers Radio, for joining us on that last segment. Lots to be happy about if you're an Auburn fan right now. And, of course, we talked a lot about Auburn this hour. Corey, how about we talk about some of the rest of these tournament games? Because, believe it or not, there were other games over the weekend. Sweet 16 was the end of the road for two of the SEC teams, two of the four that entered the Sweet 16. You had LSU blown out by Michigan State 80-63 on Friday, I believe they played that game. Or maybe, no, it was Thursday. The three-pointers, it was Friday, that's right, because only Tennessee played on Thursday. But the three-pointers pretty much quit falling for the Tigers. They were killed on the glass. Everything kind of went wrong for LSU on Friday night. Sparty out-rebounded the Tigers 34-20 by halftime. So now LSU heads into the offseason with some major, major uncertainty. We'll find out if suspended coach Will Wade somehow can come back after those recruiting violations. Alleged recruiting violations.
It's going to be real tough for that LSU program, and with recruiting season being right around the corner, they just need to make a situation a statement about who their head coach is going to be very quickly, because you can't have an interim coach with recruits coming in. You're going to lose big-time recruits to other schools. But they absolutely played their worst game, 80-63. Michigan State, of course, wound up to play Duke in that another great March Madness game. And, Dalton, this has probably been, here from the Sweet 16 on down now to the Final Four, some of the best games. We didn't have those opening round of just – March Madness moments that you would have expected. But I tell you what, here in the Sweet 16, anytime you can get two or three out of your four games coming down to the last two possessions, that's pretty special.
Yeah, it certainly made up for a lackluster first two rounds. And one of those teams that I would have loved to see in the Elite Eight over the weekend, my Tennessee Vols, it wasn't in the cards. Their season came to an end against Purdue on Thursday in overtime at that. So Purdue played a couple overtime games. But the Vols just awful from the free throw line in the first half. Then they did have that major second half comeback, but ran out of gas in overtime. Kind of reminiscent of the game before for them against Iowa, where Tennessee led big at the half. Iowa came back and then ran out of gas in the extra minutes. But a questionable call there at the end of the second half, when Carson Edwards missed that three-pointer that would have won the game. They called a foul on Lamonte Turner, and Edwards made two of the free throws to take it into overtime. I know, a questionable call. A lot of the time we don't see that called, especially in end-of-the-game situations. But if you slow it down and look at it and just call it by the book, he did get him with the hip. That's for sure.
It was a tough situation, a tough loss. But again, you mentioned free throws. One of the simplest things to do in basketball that I think is overlooked at every age level, but it can definitely make or break you when it comes down to it. There's been a couple of teams in this NCAA tournament and really throughout the entire season. You make one free throw and you win the game. Mm-hmm. You don't put your team in a situation to where they come close, because now instead of a one possession game, it all of a sudden becomes a two possession game. And you look at the Gonzaga game, and they were able not to make free throws down the stretch, and it really Duke as well, not making free throws down the stretch, Dalton. But your Tennessee Volunteers had every opportunity, and they fought and scratched and clawed to get back and have an opportunity to represent the SEC, just couldn't find a way to finish.
Well, Purdue was really hot when they came into that Tennessee game, and again yesterday or Saturday when the season ended against Virginia. But Carson Edwards, man, he ended up winning the most outstanding player, even though they didn't make it past the Elite Eight. He scored 26 in the first game, 42 in the second game, 29 against Tennessee, and then another 42 in that game that went into overtime on Saturday, an NCAA record 28 three-pointers. And his other shooter, Ryan Klein, he was on fire against the Vols too. But talk a little bit about Carson Edwards and how great of a tournament run he put together.
A good friend of mine, Joey Burton, is who they call the shot doctor in Indiana, and he works with Carson in the offseason and during the spring break and has an opportunity to develop his shot, watch film, and work on his game. And Joey told me he went to the game at the Yummy Center in Louisville and said he has the opportunity to be one of the most prolific scorers coming out. And you look at, he played 44 minutes.
Wow.
Was 14 of 25, 10 out of 19 from the three-point line, was banking them in from everywhere, left, right. It didn't matter. Just found a way to find that rhythm. Was 4 for 4 from the free throw line and only committed 3 personal fouls. That was his stat line in losing to Virginia 75-80 in overtime. But the young man just put on a show, a scoring clinic. And if he would have continued to advance in Purdue, he had an opportunity to be the NCAA tournament's all-time leading scorer through 5 or 6 games, depending on how far Purdue was able to advance. But averaging what he did and making the amount of threes he did, he definitely put folks on notice.
Yeah, you thought at some point he would cool down after one of those first two rounds, but and I don't know if he caught bank on that last one of those last shots against Virginia that got him into overtime. Counts regardless, and Carson Edwards was just killing it. But you said it, their season ended against Virginia. But some good news for the Auburn Tigers, because Purdue ended up shooting 44% from three in that game on Saturday, and Auburn's going to need to see something like that in order to move on to the national championship game. But regardless, Cavs moving into their Final Four since 1984. That was kind of surprising to me. I thought Virginia had been in the big boy dance a little bit more often than that. But you got a lot of teams that don't see the Final Four very often or at all. Like you have Texas Tech, who upset Gonzaga over the weekend. It's just like Auburn for them, their first Final Four in program history. They beat Gonzaga 75-69. Tech, they're known for that outstanding defense. I think they have the number one defense in the nation. But the offense had to show up over the weekend also, and they were able to outscore Gonzaga 75-69. They still held Gonzaga, though. Gonzaga, I think, averages between 80 maybe 75 and 85 points a game, and they were held to 69. Fantastic job from that coach, Chris Beard, and the Texas Tech Red Raiders.
Yeah, Gonzaga led the nation in scoring and was down by 2, Texas Tech was, at halftime, and found a way to get it done just with their defensive prowess. And you love the hard hat mentality, and you love the new blood that is in the Final Four. The ratings may not like it, but sometimes that's a good thing. Just from a college, a new standpoint, you have an opportunity to see new teams in there. I know hashtag bracket burnt. Mm-hmm. Bracket busted for myself because I had North Carolina and Duke in the finals playing for it all. But it's a situation, though. Texas Tech can't take anything away from Coach Chris Beard and the job that he's done. I mean, you look at them coming out of the Big 12. They didn't win the Big 12 tournament. They got knocked out in the semifinals. But, again, found a way to go ahead and persevere and play together as a team and make this great run.
I know nobody cares about my bracket. I at least had half of it right. I had Texas Tech and Michigan State meeting there in the Final Four. Let's not we don't need to talk about the other side of my bracket because it's completely it doesn't matter at this point. But the one and done, the big juggernauts, they're all gone because Duke also lost yesterday, 68-67 in a close classic against Michigan State. I think Zion was again the best player on the court, but he didn't seem to get much help from his teammates. RJ Barrett, he did put up 21 points, but he also had 7 turnovers in that loss yesterday. And on the other side of the court, Cassius Winston, Michigan State's leader and their point guard, he really took over when it mattered, scored 20 points and 10 assists and all that in front of former Spartan Magic Johnson.
Yeah, that's awesome to see Magic Johnson there supporting his Michigan State Spartans. But you hate it for Coach K because Zion Williamson is just a freak. I mean, he is an absolute honor to watch him play the game of basketball. I think he's the name in sports that's just buzzing in all sports right mm-hmm. now. It doesn't matter. You pick a sport, and Zion Williamson is the topic of all conversations, just his ability to be 18 years old, 280, and do what he did. And, you know, you can't take anything away from Duke being 32-6 on the season, but you really would have liked to seen them in the Final Four to get everything on all pages. But Williamson didn't have a lot of help, did as much as he could, scoring 24 points, and RJ Barrett had 21. Just wasn't enough. The Spartans, again, found a way to get it done late in the game, made free throws when they had to, clutch threes and execution coming out of timeouts by Tom Izzo and his Spartans.
And then there were four, and Michigan State's one of those teams. They'll be in the second game come Saturday night. That first one, Auburn of Virginia, they'll be on the court first in Minneapolis, 5:09 on Saturday. You can hear that game right here on FM Talk 106.5. And Auburn, again, the underdog in this game. They're getting used to it at this point. The opening lines had them as 5-point underdogs against the Cavaliers. You got a couple teams that have seen kind of similar tournament runs. They've both been tested with some near upset losses, and they've both gone into overtime in this last round. But the more, Corey, the more I look at this matchup, the more I really like Auburn's chances. I did gather some info on Virginia. Of course, their offense, the slowest in the country when it comes to tempo, but they're still one of the most efficient offenses in the country. Even though they slow it down, they're still able to make their shots. They're good at not turning the ball over and also good at turning the ball over when they're on defense. And that's something that we, of course, know that Auburn is great at, is forcing turnovers, especially from the guard spot and when the ball gets into the lane against those forwards, maybe not as much with Okiki off the floor, but they're able to get their hands in there and force some steals and head back the other way. But the main thing that I think will be talked about going into this week is Virginia's heralded pack line defense that makes it just so difficult to score inside because you got all five guys with a foot on the inside, and when somebody on the other team crashes in, they all come in together and close in on the ball handler and forces the other team to kick it back out to a three-point shot. And it's usually contested because their guards and wings have such long length. Their arms are just so long and they're so tall. But this really, I think if Auburn can stay hot from three, they'll get some opportunities to shoot from outside the arc.
I think they will as also Dalton. But the biggest thing for Virginia, I mean, you look at them being a one seed a year ago and losing the first time in school history, in NCAA tournament history, losing to a 16 seed. They played with a chip on their shoulder throughout this entire tournament and throughout the entire season because they really knew all eyes were on them. They want to be on the opposite side of history. And wouldn't it be interesting if you can have a one seed that lost to a 16 seed, return 8 seniors a year later and have unfinished business, and then cut the nets down almost 375 days later after losing as an overall number one seed.
It's a great storyline. I'm not sure it's a storyline that the people in Alabama want to hear after that Final Four game ends on Saturday night. But I think Auburn's got a great chance. And, you know, I think depth will really play into this game. You heard Rod Bramlett say it earlier. You said 8 seniors on that Virginia team?
Yes, returning.
But they only give minutes to maybe 7-8 guys at the most. And then we saw it this last weekend with Dunbar, Spencer, Wiley, McLemore. They're all getting out there and putting in some good minutes. So it'll come down to depth and whether the threes are falling for Auburn. And if they continue playing this great defense, we should have a masterpiece on Saturday night, Corey.
I'm really looking forward to all the Final Four matchups. I mean, Auburn, Virginia, Texas Tech, and Michigan State. Again, not household names when it comes down to college basketball, but there are four teams remaining. These are the four best teams in the country right now, and that's all you could ask for is close games when it comes down to it. And when it's all said and done, Dalton, will these games come down to one or two possessions the way that these last Elite Eight games have?
Yeah, and so the Auburn, a 5-point underdog. Michigan State, 3-point favorite over Texas Tech. And that should be a great game, too. We'll look at those games on Saturday. We'll watch them live. And then coming up next week, Sports Night just happens to be on a Monday night again. We'll break down those games in a recap form. Hopefully we're previewing an Auburn national championship matchup.
That would be interesting for the state of Alabama and definitely for the Auburn basketball family that follows them right here on FM Talk 106.5.
All right, coming up, we will wrap up the show for this Monday night. We'll also talk a little bit about Nate Oates to Alabama, what he's already got done in his, what, 3, 4, maybe 5 days as the Alabama head coach, and we'll do that when we get back. This is Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5 with Dalton Orwig and Corey LeBounty.
Recapping the weekend in sports and previewing the week ahead. This is FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night.
Welcome back, FM Talk 106.5 Sports Night, as we wrap up this Monday night edition. Coming up next, the car show with Kevin Raywinkle and Tom Claxton. Should be an outstanding show, as always. We've talked a lot of Auburn Tigers this hour. Of course we have. They're heading to the first Final Four in program history. Thanks again to Rod Bramlett, the play-by-play call for Auburn basketball, Auburn football, and Auburn baseball, joining us earlier in the show and breaking it down for us. One thing we haven't gotten the chance to discuss, because it was new news last Thursday, with Avery Johnson being bought out from his contract at the University of Alabama. They've already got their new coach. I'm sure Alabama fans were happy to see how quickly they got this done. But Nate Oates, the University of Buffalo coach, is heading from the Great White North down to the Dirty South to head coach at Alabama. And if he's able to do anything like he was with Buffalo, Alabama fans should be looking at a winner, a 96-43 record in his 4 seasons with the Bulls. Took them to the NCAA tournament 3 times. Both of the last 2 years he took them in, and of course their season ended just over a week ago in a loss to Texas Tech in that round of 32. But Oates leaves Buffalo after signing a contract extension with the Bulls just 3 weeks ago. Would have kept him with them through 2024, and Alabama was able to pluck him from up there in Buffalo. And some good news already, because you have at least one Alabama potential transfer in John Petty announcing that he's returning to Tuscaloosa next year. And what an important guy to make sure you have on the team. Averaged about 10 points a game and seemed to be the go-to guy a bunch of times when Alabama had close games.
Going to be very important. Kyra Lewis entered the transfer portal. You also have John Petty, Herbert Jones, Tevin Mack, Galen Smith, and Alex Reese all scheduled to come back for the University of Alabama Crimson Tide. So Coach Oates needed to talk to his team and try to find reassurance to those guys, especially Kyra Lewis, the youngest player Division I-wise in NCAA this year. It's going to be very important to try to keep him a part of the program. If you're able to do that, you're just really lacking a big guy, and he just got a commitment, hit the ground running, did Coach Oates. Raymond Hawkins, the big 6'9", 225-pound senior from Findlay Prep, had an opportunity to commit to the University of Alabama and did so because Coach Oates recruited him while he was at Buffalo. So he's going to join the Alabama Crimson Tide next year. And then this week, he went to go see Trendon Wofford on his spring break who in Destin, Florida. So that was huge, too, trying to go ahead and continue to woo and recruit Trendon Wofford, who was a McDonald's All-American.
I think Alabama fans would be bought in if he's able to pull Wofford out from the abyss, because it was looking like Alabama was a favorite there for a little while and then fell off with the uncertainty surrounding Avery Johnson. But in your opinion, what does Oates' trajectory need to look like in order to be considered a success? You think maybe mediocre this coming season and then a perennial NCAA team by 2021?
No matter what happens this upcoming 2019-2020 season, he's going to get a pass from me. And I think he'll get a pass from most fans because of who graduated and depending on who transfers away from the program. And you're not going to be able to build Rome overnight, but when you look at what he's going to make, $2.45 million, including base salary and talent fees, that's a pretty handsome fee to pay a SEC head coach. And the results he'll expect a lot from himself right away, and the Alabama fan base will want to see what he's going to bring to the table and see what his style is. You know what his points and his defensive average was. He liked to run up and down the floor, score the basketball in transition, and get to where they needed to be, but he loved the tough-nosed, hard-hat defensive mentality as well. So if he's able to carry that over in year number one, I think it'll be encouraging, and there'll be some type of enthusiasm going into year number two.
We'll have to see. It'll be an interesting ride. I know he's got a lot to live up to now with what Pearl is doing on the other side of the state with the Auburn Tigers, and we'll see if the Alabama fans welcome him with some Southern hospitality, him being a Northern boy who was raised in Wisconsin and has only been head coach at Buffalo. No other school. He's been the head coach at Buffalo and a couple high schools. But this is his first time down south.
Going to be interesting, Dalton. It's going to be important that he get himself a great recruiting staff or a great staff in place. I know Antoine Petway went down with him to Destin, Florida to recruit Trendon Wofford, so that may mean he's going to keep Petway when he actually names his staff. I mean, Bucky McMillan may join him at some time down the line, who was Trendon Wofford's high school coach at Mountain Brook and is a five-time state champion. But you're going to have to find a coach that knows this roots, the southeastern part. He wants to be able to recruit from coast to coast, but you want to start in your own backyard first when that type of talent is available.
All right. That does it for this week's edition of Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5. We'll be back same time, same place next week, 7 p.m. on FM Talk 106.5. Hopefully, we'll be previewing an Auburn Tigers national championship game, but we'll have to wait until Saturday to find that out. Corey, have a good one. For Corey LeBounty and Dalton Orwig, this has been Sports Night on FM Talk 106.5.